There's a door that takes you to another dimension. Once you step through it, there's no return. I've already crossed it.
We didn't want to leave without first giving you your birthday present, Michael.
Yeah.
Hey, guys. Maybe he's right. We shouldn't play this game.
I feel very bad about what I said about your mom's drinking problem.
Christy Higgins is next, Michael. You must warn her. You must take her out of the city before midnight.
Yesterday night, Debbie White, a high school student, was murdered in her own home. The murder was committed between midnight and 1 o'clock in the morning. Her body was stabbed 13 times.
What about all the money I've sent you? I bet you spent every goddamn cent on booze.
It's not what you think. You gotta listen to me. Do you remember the visions I told you about? They're real. Tony, my friend, he's been killing people. Mom, you gotta listen to me. Tony, he's gone nuts.
Come on, calm down, but I don't want that in me.
Come on, that's it, Michael. You have to have it. You need it, baby. Come on.
You're not playing with the Ouija board.
Hi, this is Kelly Maroney from Shopping Mall and the Zero Boys, and you are listening to The Hysteria Continues.
And indeed you are, and welcome back to The Hysteria Continues, episode 93. And this time we're going down south of the border to Mexico for a splattering of Latin slasher action with Don't Panic. So that's coming up a little bit later. But before we get to that, we've had a little bit of a break, 3 weeks, not too bad considering some of the other, the bigger splits we've had. Not splits, what's the right word? I don't know. Eric, what am I trying to say? How are you?
Gaps.
Gaps, that's the one.
Absences.
Yes, absences. Yeah. Anyway, how are you?
I'm good, baby.
Okay.
Look, I'm okay, baby. Yeah, baby.
But do you want it in you?
All the time, baby.
Yes. Okay, right. Well, Eric, how about we're actually even showing the dedication we have to the show, because we've had a few scheduling conflicts, but we are we're recording at an unearthly hour for our friends in Tennessee. So, Nathan, how's it feel to be up this early?
No, I mean, I'm very, very tired. I'm in my dinosaur PJs still.
Well, fair enough. Fair enough. How about you, Joseph?
Well, I'm at work, but I'm so happy that we're going south of the border, down Mexico way. So there you go.
Yes, well, it's our first one, isn't it? It's our first Mexican slasher.
Yes, well, and there's actually a plethora of them.
There is a lot, and we're going to talk. I'm sure we're talking. That's going to be one of our talking points. We also got another talking point coming from Nathan, one of the slasher. What is it? Nathan's special box? No, Nathan. What was it again?
His big juicy slot.
Okay. Well, I'll let you guys decide on what to call it.
Well, didn't you have? Didn't we have a name?
I don't remember. Did we?
Yeah.
You were Algonquin Roundtable.
Oh yes, the Algonquin Roundtable, of course.
Yes. Okay. Well, that's going to be coming up shortly. But also, we were just having a quick chat about one of the reasons why we had a little gap was we were recording another commentary for an upcoming Vinegar Syndrome release. Which we can talk about, can't we?
Yes.
Yes, it was for Don't Go in the Woods Alone, the infamous slasher nasty, infamous for all the right and wrong reasons. But yeah, we had last weekend we recorded that, so that we sent off to Vinegar Syndrome, so that will be included as a special bonus feature on their upcoming disc. Do we have any idea when that's out?
I want to say March. I could be wrong, but I think it's March.
I think it's March, but if I'm wrong, then I just want to say, I'm sorry.
Yes, we had a lot of fun with that one. we've got plenty more
coming
Craig! Up. No.
I can
huh?
hear.
No.
Huh?
Peter, huh? We were worried.
Cherry, baby, you're the most beautiful thing that's ever come into my life.
It's Dick.
Yeah, it is.
Eric, are you drinking?
I've had one Bailey's.
Okay.
Very sophisticated.
Yeah, it's very sophisticated. I can hear the ice clanking around in your glass.
It's empty now, though, so if you feel there's a need to take a break at any stage, it'll give me a chance to refill.
Okay. Well, we might do that a little bit later. But before we do, let's have a little chat about what we've been watching recently. So I'm quite intrigued because I know Joseph and Nathan, you've both seen The Guest, haven't you?
Oh, yes.
It's out here, and I've got it on my Love Film or Amazon, whatever it's called now, Q, but I haven't seen it yet, and I was wondering if it's worth a blind buy.
Would buy it. I actually want to buy it.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. Well, do you want to? Have you seen it, Eric?
I haven't, no, but I just noticed this morning that our friend Meep has put it as his number one film of 2014.
I'm curious. So, because I didn't realize that it's until I started reading a little bit about it, I didn't realize it was kind of a slasher action mashup with like an 80s throwback. Do you want to talk a little bit about it? What were your thoughts on The Guest without spoiling anything too much?
I would say it's my favorite movie I've seen this year so far, and I know that's kind of damning with faint praise considering the year has not really started. But it's by the guys who did Your Next, and Your Next is a movie that's really grown on me the more I've watched it. But this one, you know, it captured me right out of the gate. It's got a great electronic score, and the lead actor is like really, really, really compelling in the film. And it goes a few places you don't really expect it to, and it has a really protracted but really like kind of interesting like final battle. The setting they use, I'm not going to spoil it, but it's just really fun. It's a lot of good fun. I had, you know, a blast with it.
Okay, what about you, Nathan?
Well, I've watched it twice this weekend. I loved it. I mean, it's actually probably my favorite of the past few years. I think it's that good. And I don't know. I don't think people should go into it expecting a slasher movie, because it's not like to me, it's more of a action thriller hybrid with maybe a little slasher elements peppered in, but nothing like you would. People shouldn't go in thinking it's anything slasher, you know, related.
Right.
I don't want people to, you know, get disappointed about that. But I agree with Joseph. The lead actor is great, especially for somebody like me, because I watched Downton Abbey, and he was in Downton Abbey.
What?
Yes, I do watch it. I like it.
Do you realize you're probably the only person who watches Don't Go in the Woods Alone and Downton Abbey?
Yeah, that's probably true.
Probably, yeah. But the actor was a major character in the first few seasons of Downton Abbey, and I was hesitant about him playing this character because I was thinking, I don't know if he could pull that off, but he did, and he was very, very good. And the soundtrack, I think, talking about this movie, you have to mention the soundtrack. The soundtrack is excellent, because a lot of times in this movie, what they do is they listen to a lot of music, but the music that they're listening to in the movie fits the scene. Right. You know, and I liked, you know, that they did that. I thought that was, you know, kind of neat.
Kind of like an electronic new wave type stuff going on.
Definitely. It's definitely like new wave. And I don't know if Joseph got this, but there was, at least at the ending, I was getting like a Argento kind of feel as far as like how artistic like the final battle is, like from a, you know, like the way the director uses the colors, because it's very colorful. And
the color
like
palette definitely screams Argento.
Yes, definitely. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he was kind of their inspiration in that, the final scene, because of the way all the colors flow and the music and just the way it all goes down, it's very artistic, in my opinion.
Okay.
I mean, this would be kind of an unfair like comparison, but if I were going to like compare it to any movies, I'd say it's like a cross between The Terminator and like Hand That Rocks the Cradle, but with like a kind of a jolly kind of edge to it.
Well, and they actually said, the lead actor said the director had him watch Terminator 1 and 2 before they even filmed it, because he was kind of going for that kind of vibe, especially the Robert Patrick role in Part 2. He wanted to go for that kind of, you know, feel for the lead character.
Sounds good.
Yeah, okay. Definitely check that out for the next episode. I'd like to hear what you think about
your guys' thoughts. Yeah.
Okay, well, that sounds good. Well, Nathan, do you want to Anything else you've seen over the last few
weeks? Let's see. Well, I went to Grant's. Oh, and that's another thing, Joseph, I meant to tell you. He loved The Guest.
Like, oh, that's good.
Yeah, I mean, and Greg is one of these guys who's completely critical of every new movie that comes out. So speaking of which, we watched Exists, which he was extremely critical of.
Oh, really?
The new, Bigfoot movie, found footage. I thought it was okay. I mean, I didn't dislike it, but I didn't like it a lot either.
That's pretty much how I felt. I just thought it was okay.
Yeah, the characters in it, they kind of range from boring to annoying. Like, I didn't really care much about the characters in it. But that being said, there's actually some really good moments. Like, you know, there's a good scene where one of the guys wants to get a cell phone signal. So he's riding his bike and he has one of those GoPro cameras on his helmet. So, you know, I mean, they get some good usage out of that, you know, with the Bigfoot, you know, kind of running alongside parallel to him. So, yeah, there's a lot of good scenes in the movie. But overall, the movie itself is just kind of meh.
Okay.
I would agree.
That's not the one by, because there's been a number of the, is that the one by the Blair Witch guy?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Yep. I thought you saw the other one, the other Bigfoot one with the couple in the woods. What was that one called? That
Willow
was,
Creek.
Willow Creek. Creek. That was it. Yeah.
That's the Bobcat Goldthwait film.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, that sounds like one to avoid.
Let's see. My last one was, I watched one called No Vacancy. And to be honest with you, it kind of reminded me of Vacancy.
Okay.
I wonder why.
It's like, well, it's actually a larger group of people. It's like, you know, I don't know, six or seven friends. It's actually been a few weeks since I watched it, but they end up staying at this little rest stop motel where these people that run it seem really nice, but of course they're not. And while I was watching it, you know, I was entertained enough watching it, but, you know, it kind of goes into these crazy, like, you know, torture set pieces. And I don't know, in my opinion, it kind of takes you out of the movie because you're just thinking, how'd they rig all this up? And then there's like, kind of a twist towards the end that was really ridiculous. But overall, I mean, it's a good time waster, but it's not the kind of movie that's going to be memorable enough to stick with you. I mean, because I watched it a couple of weeks ago, and I just kind of remember bits and pieces about it now.
Okay. Well, thank you. Is that everything, Nathan?
That's all I've seen.
Well, brilliant. Thank you. Joseph, as we started with you as well, what have you been watching?
The only other two films I saw, the first was Predestination with Ethan Hawke. Mm. It's based like, you know, to the letter on Robert Heinlein's All You Zombies. So if you've read that short story, you'll pretty much know where the story's going. But basically, Ethan Hawke is I'm not going to say what he is, but he's a bartender. I'll just say that. And this person comes into the bar and tells them the story about how they were, you know, pretty much given up for adoption when they were an infant, and they grew up to be kind of, you know, kind of cold and distant from people. And this person tried to get into the space program, and then this person tells Ethan Hawke the story of how their first love, you know, abandoned them, and someone gets killed, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. And so Ethan Hawke, you know, reveals to this person that, hey, I have a way for you to, you know, get revenge on this person. And it's basically all the twists and turns are kind of dependent on the whole, the predestination paradox of time travel. And so you kind of have to take those, you know, as they come, so be it, as it were. But it's a pretty good movie. It's more of a draw. I'd say it's more dramatic than it is kind of exciting. I went in thinking it was going to be like this kind of, you know, thriller based on Robert Heinlein's story, but it's more kind of dramatic. I mean, it's certainly kind of, you know, got its gory moments and kind of, you know, exciting moments, but it's more talky, which I didn't really mind. I mean, it's a good one-time watch, but I would, basically suggest just either see it for Ethan Hawke's performance, which is good, or just, stick to the short story, which is a lot better.
Okay, I've not seen it. How about you, Eric and Nathan?
No.
Have you?
No.
No. No.
Okay, right. Anything else, Joseph?
Yeah, the other one is, this one's a corker. It's called Open Windows. It stars Elijah Wood. Elijah Wood is this guy who runs a fan website for this actress, and he's told...
Nathan.
Oh, by the way...
Yeah, Nathan.
Basically, it's a found footage movie told from the point of view of, webcams on, laptops and stuff. But basically, Elijah Wood is this guy who runs a fan website for an actress, and he gets told that he's won a contest where he can meet her after an award ceremony. So he gets put up in this hotel room, and he's watching the awards ceremony on his laptop. Via live feed. And then a few minutes later, he finds out that the actress canceled on him. And then it just kind of turns into this whole person ends up, stalking the actress, and he's using Elijah Wood to get to her. And it's pretty interesting the way they kind of use the webcams, but it gets so ridiculous. I mean, this is the most ridiculous movie I've ever seen, as far as taking liberties with reality. There's so many absurd plot twists, and especially not least of which is the final kind of gotcha moment. It's just so ridiculous. You'll be just going, oh, come on. It's just so funny. You have to see it just to laugh. I mean, it's one of those movies where you keep expecting, they pretty much throw everything, even the kitchen sink, at you. So by the time you get to the end, you're like, okay, so some guy's going to come out from behind a curtain soon and start twirling his mustache and explaining how all this goes down. But they do you one better with the final twist. And you just have to see it. It's just – it's so hilariously bad, but, it's kind of entertaining because of it.
Hmm. Well, okay. That sounds interesting.
And I want to say who it was. It was directed by someone. Oh, it was directed by Nacho Vigalondo, who did Time Crimes. So I went in, expecting kind of a, something better, honestly. But, what I got was pretty much a laugh fest. But I definitely recommend this if you really want to be like, oh, come on. But, yeah, there you go.
Excellent. Okay.
Well, I'd watch that. I'd watch anything with Elijah Wood in it.
Even Lord of the Rings?
Well, he's kind of got all that makeup and stuff on, so probably not.
Wood, rings, too many jokes, too many jokes.
Well, we haven't had a...
Nation, no, please, hold your hand.
And that segues nicely onto Eric.
Uh-huh. Well, I saw The Babadook, which was the much lauded Australian horror movie that came out in cinemas here in October. Now, I know you've seen it, Justin, and you were kind of lukewarm about it, so I knew kind of not to expect anything brilliant. But I have to say, I was surprised about how much I really didn't like the film. It's the story of a mother struggling to bring up her problem child on her own, and she finds this pop-up book in the house they're renting, and the lead character in the pop-up book, who is the Babadook of the title, appears to come to life. Or is it all in her head because she's stressed? Now, it's been getting 4- and 5-star reviews from the mainstream press, and I'm not sure I can see where they're coming from at all. Often with films that get great reviews, I can see why, even if I don't like them. But with this one, I don't understand. I found the two lead characters so despicably unlikable. We've spoken a lot about Eden Lake in the past, and in Eden Lake, I know myself, Joseph, and Nathan, anyway, want to sort of climb into the film and start punching people. Well, that's how I felt with The Babadook, especially with that kid. Jesus, he was so horrible. I found the two lead characters who are on screen for virtually the entire 90 minutes to be so unlikable. And then the horror element of the film, it's no more effective than something like Mama, I thought. It has this kind of shadowy figure with a deep voice appearing sort of fleetingly from time to time, and that's about it. No, I didn't care for it at all. I don't see what the fuss is about with The Babadook at all. I'm sorry.
Did I forget? Did Nathan and Joseph, have you seen it?
No, not yet.
Mm-hmm. No, and the more I hear about it, the less I want to see it.
I'm really just kind of burned out on all the boo ghost paranormal kind of entity movies at the moment.
I think it was. I think I'd like to watch it again at some point, just to get, because I kind of know what to expect now. I think it was missold as like Mama, wasn't it, or something like that.
Yeah, and actually, I mean, the horror is kind of pushed to the background a lot of the time. I can imagine. Yeah. I can imagine the interviews, you know, with the director saying, "Oh, this isn't a horror movie; it's a psychological thriller or a psychological study of a woman on the verge of a breakdown or something."
Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Anyway,
okay, yeah,
yeah. Well, another. Sorry, were you going to say?
No, carry on.
Okay, the other film I watched, and I know Joseph saw this and he was a bit meh about it, but I watched As Above, So Below, which was the found footage film set in the catacombs of Paris.
I've not seen it. That was Nathan.
Oh, was it? Sorry, Nathan.
And I wasn't really meh. I was just, I don't know, like, I just kept thinking it could be a little better.
Because I went into it expecting a meh movie, and I ended up quite enjoying it, to be honest. It's about an archaeological team and a documentary team that followed them into the catacombs underneath Paris to find this sort of mystical stone, and they find sort of more than they bargained for. What I liked about it is it has a real nightmarish atmosphere, you know, with lots of supernatural and surreal events happening and logic defying physics, where they end up going in circles even though tunnels are supposed to be straight, and, you know, up becomes down and down becomes up. And I thought the central idea, towards the end, where it's revealed sort of why they're experiencing what they're experiencing, has been done before. It's nothing new. But I still thought the film was very good. And in terms of a menacing atmosphere created by a found footage film, I thought this was one of the best since The Blair Witch Project. Okay. So I was pleasantly surprised. Again, expecting a meh movie, I got something more, I thought.
Okay, well, that's interesting. I will put that on my love film queue and then blast.
I think my biggest problem with it was... like, a lot of the characters, we don't really get to know them, so when they come across their own personal hell, so to speak, I don't think it packed as much of a punch as it could have if we would have got to know them better. Like, some of them, like, we barely know them at all.
But
overall, I mean, and I also say that the ending goes against what most found footage films do.
Yeah, it does.
And I like that.
Yeah, that was an interesting, yeah. Yeah, speaking of films that go against things that normal narrative films will do, I won't reveal why I say this, but I watched another film last night called La Residencia, which is a 1969 Spanish horror film, probably better known by its English export title of The House That Screamed. It's set in the late 19th century in a secluded all-girls boarding school. And it's run with an iron fist by the hard-as-nails headmistress, and it features one of the best bitchy, bully head girls ever to be seen in a movie. She's like an 1890s version of Justin, I thought.
Thank you, Eric.
Yeah, you're welcome. The less than friendly atmosphere leads to several girls trying to escape, or at least that's what everyone assumes, as several of the girls are actually being killed off by an unseen killer. And this is where I realized, hey, this is a slasher movie. I mean, I'd heard about the film, but I'd never really read the plot synopsis. The reason I wanted to seek it out was it's directed by Narciso Ibanez Serrador. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that correctly, who directed one of my favorite movies of all time, Who Can Kill a Child, the 1976 movie. Anyway, they went on to invent the quiz show 3-2-1 and earned a fortune, apparently. I thought it was an incredibly well-made movie. The body count is very low, and a lot of the time it works better as kind of a girl struggling to get through boarding school type movie than it does as a horror film. But I thought it was really interesting, really well done. And the ending is reminiscent of a certain film that we like very much, but I won't mention which in case it spoils it for you. But I would recommend it. It's called The House That Screamed, and it doesn't feel at all like a European movie. It's made in Spain, set in France, but the version I saw was dubbed with mostly English accents, so it didn't feel like a you know, continental movie to me.
Yeah, no, it's a good film, isn't it?
Sorry. I was just going to ask, is there any cat fighting in that movie?
Not really. I don't know if they had cat fights in 1890s.
Because you say bitchy girls.
Well, there is bitchy girls, but in an 1890s styly.
Okay.
So there's no pulling hair or that, I'm afraid.
But it's, as you say, without giving anything away, it does obviously inspired a 80s slasher movie, didn't it?
It does, yeah. And also, another thing is that around the 70-minute mark, it does something really, really unusual for a film of any kind. I won't say what, but yeah.
The girl's like, oh, Sylvia, you churned my butter without asking.
That's kind of like it, what it's like.
Yeah, okay.
Excellent. Okay, anything else, Eric?
No, that's it. Well, I saw one more, but I think you're going to mention it, yeah.
Oh, yes. Well, I'll start with that one. It was one that Joseph and probably Nathan have talked about, but I just... because you've got Amazon Prime now with streaming, and I was just looking to see what new movies have come on, and we just wanted something kind of mindless just to watch one evening, and watched Evidence from 2013, the one with Radha Mitchell and Stephen Moyer, and didn't really have high hopes for it, and it's an incredibly silly movie, but it was vastly entertaining, and I love it when you watch a film you're not really expecting much from, like a time waster, and then you end up kind of engrossed or at least very much entertained. And this was that movie, really, as it was quite not a revelation, it's not life-changing, but it's a film that I thought was a lot of fun. And it's essentially it's a kind of a mixture between a found footage and a slasher movie, I kind of guess, with starts with like a very CSI with all that kind of trickery of like the you know, those things which they started in the what was it, the Keanu Reeves movie, which name escapes me now,
Matrix,
yes, all that kind of Matrix thing where it starts with like the camera is frozen, but it kind of is going round and
bullet time,
yes, and then it's they find all these cameras and phones and things like that, and they're piecing together the found footage to try and find out what happened at this massacre at this kind of deserted petrol station out in the desert. It has loads and loads of twists throughout, and it just keeps on changing, and it works really, really well. In fact, I think I was watching it and thinking, well, actually, if they did make a found footage Friday 13th, which I think they've decided not to now, then it could work. But the difference with this was it was a slasher movie with the killer's identity was a mystery throughout, and the way that it was revealed or not revealed, and you think you know what's going on, and it's quite cleverly done. But is that the one you're talking about, Eric?
Yes. And it's not one I was really aware of until you guys brought it up, but I was, as you say, I was very entertained by it. There is the one flaw I find with it, and with all found footage movies, is when people start running and falling over and you can't really see what's going on. Those kind of things bug me, but there are scenes where the camera's held steady and they're creeping around dimly lit corridors. It's really effective. Mm-hmm. And I do, like you say, the twists keep coming, and I certainly didn't guess the ending, but I'm hopeless for that anyway. I'm sure Joseph probably did, though.
No, actually, I did not. No? That's one of the few movies that really caught me off guard.
Mm. I mean, it is a bit far-fetched and silly and all that, but it's played, you know, dead straight, and it was highly entertaining. And the killer, as we should mention, is... I don't know, is it a cinematic first with the welder's mask and the welding torch as the weapon?
There has been a film called Maniac, I think, back in the 50s or 60s that had a killer with weld. But I haven't seen it, I've just seen an image from it. So,
And there is one scene in it. Now, you don't get to see much because, as with found footage, it's all done with shaky cam shots and that. But somebody's arm gets chopped off with a welding torch. I didn't think it would be that powerful, but obviously it is.
Mm. I thought it was. I thought that they could have just run away if they wanted to. They could have just legged it, couldn't they? Because I saw the welder; it was connected to a pipe, well, not a pipe, but like a. It was.
Oh yeah, it would have to be connected to it.
Yeah, to actually get the gas or whatever was coming through. So if they'd run far enough away, they could have got away from the welder. They would have run after them and stopped, and not been able to go any further. But yeah, no, I thought it was very entertaining. But Nathan,
the location. Sorry. No, I was just going to say the location reminded me of the original 1985 Hills of Eyes Part 2. It's that kind of setting. It's kind of an abandoned, as you say, a petrol station, but there's also other buildings there to, you know, have lots of nooks and crannies to hide in.
Yeah, it's very good. So, Joseph and Nathan, you've both seen it, haven't you?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. And remind
it is,
us.
It's very, very silly, but it, like you said, it's very highly entertaining and... You'll be hard pressed to guess a lot of the twists that are thrown your way, but as silly as this movie is, I still think the one I recommended earlier. Well, I wouldn't recommend it, but the one I talked about earlier, Open Windows, puts this one to shame as far as "Oh, come on" goes, because Evidence certainly has a few of those "Oh, come on" moments.
What I liked about Evidence is, you know, they, you know, the found footage part obviously is the police piecing together the tapes that were found. And what I like is that there was, you know, two cameras used. So at some point you kind of jump back and forth between the two cameras to get an idea of what, I guess, each camera caught, which I kind of like that.
Yeah, I thought it's just it was very clever. But it's kind of shot in the way of like CSI. It's really flashy. A lot of it's kind of like a, you know, feels almost like a TV show.
Yeah, not a spinning camera. For the CSI moments where we're in the police station where it's not found footage, there's tons of sort of cameras spinning around the main characters.
Which can be quite annoying, but actually works, I think, in this kind of, the whole thing is all about, it's all a slight, visual slights, isn't it? And sort of a sleight of hand kind of things throughout the film. So yeah, it was good. So definitely recommend. The other film, I can't remember if I mentioned this last time, was a film I saw called Wither, which is basically, could be summed up as the Swedish Evil Dead, from a couple of years ago. And it's kind of, I quite liked it. It's incredibly gory. There's just loads of blood, probably about 10 times as much blood as the Evil Dead remake, if you can imagine that. And it's kind of, you know, it's just this group of teenagers or early 20-somethings go to this cabin, it's kind of like a folklore. It's kind of a spirit or some kind of demon or something that's kind of in the basement of this house, and they get possessed and become kind of like zombies, but kind of violent zombies, and like one by one sort of kill each other and then come back to life and then kill the others. But it's for, you know, like as an 80s throwback, it's worth a watch. It's not anything particularly fantastic, but it's quite well done. It doesn't do anything you wouldn't expect it to, but it was okay. But then, any of you heard of that? It's from
no.
a couple of years ago. It's, I think, 2013.
I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it.
I think someone, before I shut the forums down, someone posted about it, and I was going to see it, but I never got around to it.
Yeah, I'm just having a look, actually. Well, I would do, but it's not loading. But, yeah, I think it's from... Here we go,
2012.
Or 2012. Oh, yeah, so 2012, so a couple of years old. But, yeah, worth a watch. The other film I haven't seen, but I saw the trailer for, and it's getting surprisingly good advanced reviews, is Unfriended. Have you seen the trailer for that?
Not the trailer, but I've read the advanced blurb. Sounds good.
Yeah, it's kind of what reminded me when you were talking about Open Windows, Joseph, because the whole thing is a Skype, just like this, except we don't see each other when we're doing it, but it's basically, I think the whole thing is through social media. And it's kind of classic slasher movie setup with a teenage girl has some embarrassing video leaked to the internet, and she shoots herself, kills herself, and then a year later all her friends are online talking, and then someone pops up and they don't know who it is, and then basically I think they either get pitted against each other or they start dying, and it's all played out through Facebook, Skype, Twitter and various other things, I think. So, but it sounds like quite a trite kind of concept, but the advanced reviews I've read have actually said it's done very well. So I think that's coming out in April, so that'd be interesting to see.
To cinemas or straight to DVD?
I think to cinemas. Mm. I think to cinemas, but I don't know. I mean, I think it is coming out to cinemas, but it'd be interesting to see how it works, if it works well on a big screen, or actually its kind of natural home would be on a laptop or on a tablet because of the nature of what it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that wraps it up. But
Unfriended. It seems like I've seen that, like it was already like put on torrents. But maybe I'm thinking of a different movie. I think I'm thinking of a different movie.
There's a film apparently which I haven't seen or heard of before called The Den, which is apparently does a similar thing.
Yeah, The Den. That's the one I saw. Yeah, but I couldn't really tell you anything about it because I don't really remember anything about it.
No,
The Den is ridiculous. I watched it on Netflix. It's entertaining, but man, is it ridiculous, especially the twist in it.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see how this goes. I mean, one of these kind of films is they age really quickly, don't they? Anything using any kind of technology, you know, it kind of within a couple of years, it's going to look quite dated. But I kind of guess that's the not the joy of it, but that's the
pitfall.
Pitfall, yeah. But yeah, so that's recently seen. But I think Nathan, should we go on to your talking point?
Yes.
Yes,
I think we should. My Algonquin Roundtable. Mm. And this time it's about, you know, and not necessarily slasher movies, but like horror movies in general, like before, you know, the internet, you know, like Baby Jesus and everything made things, I guess, super easy. Is there a movie that I guess was your holy grail, like something that was extremely hard to find? But you found it, like, and I'm talking about before Cinemageddon, like you found it before that, and how so? Mm. I would go, and if I started, and Joseph will back me up on this, our biggest one was Screams of a Winter Night. Ooh. And we both looked for that movie forever, and Joseph even ordered it once and got ripped off
on eBay. I remember that. Yeah.
Huh?
I remember that.
Yeah, he got ripped off, and the guy never sent it. I don't remember where we ever found it, Joseph. I know we actually found it at some point because, you know, we had it, but I don't remember where we found it.
Yeah, I think it was online. I think we paid an obscene amount of money for it.
I think we did, too. I think he and I split the cost of it because it was so expensive because we wanted to see it that badly.
Was it an original tape?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It was.
And did it live up to what you hoped?
No.
I mean, I liked it, but it wasn't worth what we spent. And you know, I don't know if you guys had this overseas, but there was the Video Hound. It was before, it was actually before the internet because I would buy the Video Hound because that had like a ton of movies in it. And I would always look up horror and try to find movies that I hadn't seen before. And I had seen Criminally Insane, but I had not seen Crazy Fat Ethel 2, and it was my holy grail. Like, I wanted to find that movie so bad, and I finally found it at this old mom-and-pop video store, and I bought it from them, and I still have it.
You've not been able to sell it to anyone?
No, I wouldn't want to sell it.
Well, fair enough. I think it's an interesting talking point, because I used to go down a video store when I lived in Brighton, and they would have loads of kind of cheaper videos, you know, just like run-of-the-mill videos. But they would have a collector's corner, like a wall of videos, which were, you know, pre-cert ones, which I kind of guess they weren't really meant to be selling, but I think they probably turned a blind eye. They didn't have any, like, video nasties or anything there. But yeah, there'd be all these kind of weird and wonderful tapes with the covers that things like Tombs of the Blind Dead or those kind of films like that, which so before the internet, I kind of buying stuff, you know, films like Blood Song, like, you know, I've never heard of, or Blood Beat, those kind of films, which I, before the internet, I you know, there was no information about them at all, so it kind of made them a little bit more exotic. Whereas now, a lot of films are literally a click away. I mean, I, you know, the film today we're watching, talking about Don't Panic, was at least on YouTube, has been taken down recently, but it's still up there if you can speak Turkish or Spanish in its entirety. So it's tricky. I mean, there's still kind of films, you know, out there that I'd like to see that I've not been able to track down. I mean, obviously the kind of the classic one was way, way back in the midst of time with the, you know, Summer House Slaughter and Gory Graduation, which, of course, that you guys are bringing the latter to life. But for a while, it felt like those movies may, you know, for a little while, it felt like those movies did exist. But the dawn of the internet, it didn't take too much to realise that they were made up. But yeah, so in some ways, it's funny to look back and be sort of nostalgic for a time when, I mean, certainly in the UK, you go to prison for swapping videos for, you know, or be massive fine or lose your whole collection, you know, at points in the 1980s, so, and early 90s, I kind of guess. So it kind of added that frizz on as well of kind of fear. But certainly a lot of films back in the UK, that films like Silent Night, Deadly Night, didn't come out on video in Britain. You know, Silent Night, Deadly Night 2 was refused a certificate. So those films just didn't even come out, you know, in the UK. And before the internet, the only way you could get them would be to import them from the States. And that would run the risk of having them seized at customs. So I haven't heard of anyone having stuff seized at customs for a while, but I imagine it still probably still happens. But again, to be honest, I still buy films. I mean, I buy the Blu-ray of, you know, Curtains and you know, the Burning and all the, you know, the films I'm upgrading. But you know, I'm definitely, my collection grows a lot less now than it did, say, 4, 5, or 10 years ago, just purely because there's so much options to watch stuff online, both legally and obviously I don't do it illegally, but some people do. What?
Joseph.
Joseph. I mean, I don't watch new movies online. I mean, the only ones I do download are ones, you know, that I either have copies of already on VHS or quite, you know, obscure films that, to be honest, I don't know if anyone's ever going to make release them in any kind of proper format anyway. So, but anyway, I've prattled on long enough. What about you, Eric?
Yeah, well, I grew up in what's termed a city in Ireland, but by your standards would be a small town, really. So, and in the 80s, of course, we had no internet, so I didn't really know what I was missing out on, so I don't think I even had any holy grails in mind. I remember just wanting to see the uncut versions of a lot of the films that I was watching. Like, I wanted to see the full uncut version of Evil Dead and The Burning and other video nasties. And I suppose one of the holy grails I had for a long time was, looking back, it's kind of pathetic, was Joe D'Amato's Anthropophagus, the Beast, also known as the Grim Reaper, because it had such a notoriety about it. And it was one of the few sort of obscure European movies that I'd actually read about at the time. Again, I had no access to Fangoria or any of those. I was reading basically mainstream video magazines. But I remember Anthropophagus coming up, and it sounded like the most disturbing and disgusting, gory film ever. And it was one I was on the hunt on for a while. And I managed to track down a copy illegally through a seller in the UK. And when I got it, it was barely watchable because it was like about 17th generation of a film that didn't look very good in its first generation anyway. But that was probably my one holy grail from back then. And as Justin was saying, now it's easy. There's probably, for me, no such thing really as a holy grail, apart from the unobtainable uncut version of Friday the 13th Part 2. You know, if that somebody surfaced somewhere, I'd be, you know, willing to pay megabucks. When I say megabucks, I mean 20 euro.
I would Joseph? Add, I would add on top of Screams of a Winter Night, I would add like things like Savage Water or Mirage or Blotterin, which is the Bleeder. Savage Water was actually sent to me by Nigel, you know, before social media, like, you know, 5 or 6 years before, like, Facebook or Twitter or even MySpace became a thing. There was a time where the only proof of his existence was, like, something, you know, that story that Joe Bob Briggs kind of relegated, which I spoke about on the commentary that unfortunately didn't really get a proper release. But so, you know, I was kind of wondering if it actually really existed. So and finally, you know, Nigel saw it at some, you know, hole in the wall video store and just sent it to me. And it was a PAL tape. So, you know, this is before the kind of the advent of, like, you know, multi-region. I had to actually take it to get it converted to NTSC just so I could watch it. But at the time, no. But I've grown to appreciate the film. So, you know, now it would probably be worth it. I'd say the same for Mirage, which I liked Mirage a lot. But I had in mind a completely different movie than what Mirage turned out to be. For some reason, I don't think Mirage was ever released in the United States on VHS, which is kind of weird because it was filmed in the United States, like Savage Water, and certainly had, well, I wouldn't say more famous people in it, had, you know, more, I guess, noticeable people in it. But
people who could act.
Yeah, that. And but it was a movie where, you know, I spent years tracking it down, and while I enjoyed it, I was kind of disappointed in it. And the same was for the Swedish film, The Bleeder, or a.k.a. Blotteren, or however you want to pronounce it. That's a movie I didn't even get to see until, you know, until the Baby Jesus became popular.
Okay, right. Thank you. Who's hasn't spoken?
I think everybody's spoken. Yeah. I want to say that while I really, really appreciate, you know, being able to find movies, you know, very easily now, I still kind of miss hunting for, you know, that one movie that kind of eludes you.
It's like when Nathan and I would drive like 600 miles to go to a horror film convention, we'd keep our eye kind of like off the road to see if there's any kind of video stores, just so we could go in to see if they had any like old VHS tapes they'd be willing to part with. And I miss like hunting old video stores because, you know, when the internet was kind of in its infancy, you know, Chattanooga, where we live, there was probably like 15 to 20 video stores, but now there's like nothing. It's kind of sad to think that era's gone.
It's funny, isn't it? I mean, I had a kind of, before I knew we were going to talk about this, well, you reminded me we were going to talk about this, that today I was doing some research about the film we're going to talk about in a minute, Don't Panic, and I was looking up about Mexican slasher movies to see what else that had been made and what I'd watched. And there was a kind of an old 90s style, well, as in late 90s style bootlegger page, and I can't remember the name of it now, where they were selling rare tapes, but obviously not you know, basically copies of tapes. So a proper bootlegger. And it said, the title came up, and I can't remember what it was, but it said Mexican 1980 Mexican Friday version of Friday 13th. And I thought, wow, I didn't even know there was a Mexican ripoff of Friday 13th. And I went to look to elsewhere to see what that film was, and it turned out that I misread it. It was actually the 80s rather than 1980, and it was actually 1990 or 89 slasher by the same director as Don't Panic. But I just thought, you know, sometimes you get those little things, you think, actually, well, there is a film, maybe there's this film I've never seen. So it happens more rarely these days, but it doesn't never happen. So I kind of guess always be looking for that elusive Holy Grail. But I agree with Eric actually on Friday 13th Part 2, because it happened with My Bloody Valentine, didn't it?
Yeah.
But it's a game with something like Curtains. It would have been nice to have seen the original cut of Curtains, but unfortunately, if Synapse or whoever did it had done the film a couple of years before, we probably would have had the different cut, or the original cut of Curtains. But because all of that footage was thrown away, wasn't it, within the last year, and unfortunately the longer it goes on, the less likely it is you're going to find those kind of movies. But I mean, they find, you know, they're always finding old films in attics and stuff, aren't they? So who knows.
That's why film preservation is extremely important.
Well, exactly. Who knows? Anal Paprika 13 with starring Eric. Might, hey, finding
which
it
is on the IMDb now.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is actually.
No, I'm gonna have a look.
Is it?
Someone listened to our show and did it.
No, they didn't. Did they?
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh. Phew.
It's only a matter of time, though, isn't
Someone's
it?
Someone's going to eventually.
Yeah, because you keep mentioning it.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you, Nathan, for a very worthy talking point. So hopefully we haven't bored our listeners rigid. Well, actually.
Just as a segue, I know this is very cheap and kind of, cheap, but if you did know about the Gory Graduation kind of Holy Grail thing, look us up on Facebook. Just search for Gory Graduation.
Yes. Yes. And we'll be hearing more about that, won't you, as you move forward over the next... when are you hoping to shoot?
It'd be late summer. Probably late summer, July or August, I'm thinking.
Okay, right. Well, we should look forward to that. So, okay, well, we're already almost, well, not quite the hour mark, but we're getting there. So we're going to seek now into our movie of the week. And so we're off down south, down to Mexico Way with Don't Panic. And here is the trailer. On his 17th birthday, Michael is given a present of a Ouija board by Tony, his best friend. At a session, Tony, using a medium known to him only as Virgil, unwittingly unlocks the evil forces of the board. Soon, there is a wave of violent killings and the chief suspect appears to be Michael. He has been witness to all the killings via premonitions and out-of-body experiences. Is Michael the killer? Can he prove his innocence, or is someone else being possessed by the evil spirit? So Don't Panic is a kind of late 80s slasher, supernatural slasher film, very, very much modelled on Nightmare on Elm Street, which we will probably discuss quite a bit in a minute. But it's a film that I originally had on VHS tape many years ago. And it's a bit of a cheesy favourite of mine, and I thought it was kind of quite, it was long overdue that we kind of went down to Mexico, because Mexico has produced quite a few slasher movies, and they're typically very, very gory as well, much gorier than kind of American slasher movies of the time. But yes, Don't Panic is, as I say, the story of Michael, this 17-year-old with, like, I think I reviewed his hair as much as anything in when I reviewed for Hysteria Lives.
It like deserves its own review.
It was like he's got such a tight blonde mullet. He said it looked like a poodle's arse. And that's being kind, because there's a great bit in it where his girlfriend with the monobrow is fondling his mullet as they were having sex, which is very bizarre. I mean, the whole thing is bizarre, but I don't know whether or not it's a tongue-in-cheek kind of movie, because I also watched it's a Graveyard of Terror, his earlier 1985 kind of slasher zombie supernatural mashup, which is
Cemetery of Terror.
What did I say? Graveyard of Terror.
Graveyard.
Yeah, sorry. I was getting mixed up with Grave Robbers, I think is 1990s film. But Cemetery of Terror, which we'll talk a little bit about later, is also incredibly fun. They're very, very entertaining. I really enjoy Mexican slasher movies.
Isn't that the one featured in Don't Panic?
It is, yes.
On
the TV. So it's there's lots of nods to Nightmare on Elm Street, and I think in Nightmare on Elm Street, what's Nancy watching? That's actually Texas Chainsaw.
Evil Dead.
Evil Dead.
Yeah.
But in this film, the director, is it Ruben Galindo Jr., references his own film, The Cemetery of Terror, in that. And actually that film and this film and actually most of his films kind of share a number of the same cast, although I think Michael's mullet only makes one outing, if I remember. Or he might be in some of those other movies, I don't know. But yeah, I watched it again. It's just incredibly cheesy, very gory, and surprisingly for a post-Freddy ripoff, he doesn't... one of the things that we spoke about before is about the quipping killers, which obviously the later Nightmare on Elm Street sequels kind of descended into Freddy going from a figure of fear very, very quickly, actually, into kind of parody or of, you know, very kind of dark humour, into just very silly humour. And certainly a lot of the post Nightmare on Elm Street supernatural boogeyman killers, people had, you know, Psycho Cop and things like that. You know, they became a vogue for wisecracking killers, which I have a problem with. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But in this film, although there's a couple of quips, the killer is certainly not particularly scary, but the plays it admirably straight. But again, if you did wonder whether or not this is a slasher movie, it certainly is a slasher movie, because you have a supernatural killer going around killing people with ceremonial dagger, and in one particularly gory moment, shoving a big dagger through a teenage girl's head. Like I say, the Mexican slasher movies are typified, and you know, they're kind of basically resplendent in gore and graphic murders, which is all part of the fun. So yeah, I'd be interested to hear what you guys thought of Don't Panic. So Eric, is it your first time watching it, or?
No, I had actually seen this one before, but I didn't remember a huge amount about it. But I did remember I did enjoy it the first time I saw it. It's a fun, nicely paced movie, and it's just so very, very, very 80s. And that's what I love about it probably the most. It reminds me a bit of Italian horror movies of the late 80s that were trying really hard to look like American productions. You know, I'm thinking of films like Ghost House, Witchery, and Graveyard Disturbance in particular. And you know, as much as I like those movies, they do tend to be a bit episodic and meandering, whereas I think Don't Panic really manages to sustain a coherent, albeit silly, narrative over its 90 minutes. As you said, it's often referred to as a Mexican version of Nightmare on Elm Street, but I get strong vibes of Night of the Demons and Killer Party from it also. You know, although the Elm Street comparisons are there, the alcoholic mother, like a, you know, a middle-aged female version of Justin, and also the fact that she's played by an actress with absolutely no acting ability whatsoever, and she emotes like a lamppost. Doctor, I need to tell you something. I have a drinking problem. The gravelly voice of Virgil as well, and Virgil, of course, being a fantastic name for a villain. It's such a, you know, who is called Virgil in this day and age? And certainly no villain is. Although if you were called it, I'm sure it would make you demonic in some way. I love the scene of the face pushing out through the TV screen. It reminded me a bit of the scene in Nightmare on Elm Street 1 where Freddy's pushing through the wall above Nancy's bed, but also it was probably coincidental because they were made the same year, but in Demons 2 they used the same effect as well, and I thought it was particularly effective in Don't Panic. As I mentioned, one of the things that really is going in its favour is that gaudy 80s look. As you mentioned, Michael's sort of bubble perm, like Steve Sanders from Beverly Hills 90210. The pastel coloured tracksuits, the romantic montage, which you didn't mention, I don't think, Justin, but it's fantastic, all set on a BMX, which has to be a cinematic first. Also, I thought Alexandra, the character with the big hair who he snogs and who, you know, grabs hold of his mullet from time to time, she was really ungrateful in that montage where he goes to the trouble of buying her 3 helium balloons and then she just lets them go flying off into the sky. How ungrateful is she? But the music that plays during that montage scene is so fantastic. I don't think there's a piece of music out there that's more dated than it.
It's got lots of boo-boo, isn't it? Which even by 1989, that was quite a dated sound effect, wasn't it?
Yep, I'm sure it was. Speaking of music, and this isn't dated, this is fantastic. Did anyone spot that Tony has a vinyl copy of Duran Duran's album Rio in his bedroom? No, just me. Okay. No. So he has automatically won his way into my heart, even though he turns... Oh, am I allowed to say this? Spoiler alert. Even though he turns out to be the killer, albeit possessed by the spirit of Virgil. Mm. I was beginning to think that the character of Tony might actually be batting for the other team, because he keeps a bowl of roses, and not the chocolate kind, an actual... But he has a vase of flowers in his bedroom. I mean, do any guys do that? Straight or gay?
That is a little bit bizarre, and cut roses as well, weren't they? He's as if he's had loads and loads of boys over to show them his roses.
Yeah, and just, you know, there's this motif going through the film about this one rose. As long as love exists between Michael and Alexandra, the rose will never wither. And that line is iterated in a few different ways, you know, about 4 or 5 times through the movie, including at the very end of the film, and to a nauseating but absolutely fantastic way. Michael is also a bit odd. He's obviously probably in his 30s, maybe hitting late 20s, early 30s, and he's playing a 17-year-old who wears dinosaur pajamas. And his mini Inga style tantrum is hilarious also, where he tears down a few posters and knocks over some pencils in slow motion, which is one of the best on-screen tantrums I've ever seen. And I'm an expert on tantrums, as
well,
you know.
Well, I know. I was going to ask you if that was worthy of Inga.
It would be worthy of Inga, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, so, if Ralph disappointed her yet again, she that's something she'd do.
Knock over a pot of pencils.
Yeah, she'd knock over her pencils whilst jumping up and down the bed saying, give it to me, or whatever she says. Don't panic. It's just a really good example of late 80s bubblegum horror, and it doesn't even feel like a Mexican movie. It feels like an American production. As I said, it reminds me of Night of the Demons, that type of film, or Witchboard, something like that. I loved it, and I know we're going to mention his other I've only seen two of his other films, Grave Robbers and Cemetery of Terror, both of which were equally fun, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we'll talk about those shortly, but Joseph, how about you? What are your thoughts on Don't Panic?
I had a lot of fun with it. You guys have pretty much, you've covered a lot of the things I was going to talk about. There's a couple things you didn't cover. One is, I love the scene where he teams up with the bully character at the end, and they get the guns to go looking for the killer, or to save his girlfriend from being killed by the killer. And the bully character, I think his name is John, he goes into the convenience store to buy cigarettes, and he has a shotgun. And the guy's like, he's like, here, just take them. And he's like, oh, well, how much do I owe you? And he's like, nothing. And then he walks out of the store like a minute later. He's like, wow, thanks, man. Like, he didn't realize he's holding a shotgun in his face when he went in there to buy them. I thought that was funny. I thought Michael looked a lot like Alex Winter. So I kept expecting Keanu Reeves to pop up, you know, and with a phone booth. More spoilers here. I love that the end where Michael basically confronts the killer in that, I guess it's in that kind of steamy warehouse or whatever it is, and he gets lifted up in the air, and he's telling Alexandria to stab Tony with the dagger, and so she stabs Tony, and it kind of releases the spell, and he falls like probably 2 feet to the ground. I mean, it's not enough to like twist your ankle, but it kills him. So yes. So basically Michael dies at the end because he fell 2 feet.
That was
I like the whole happy ending with the unwithered rose on the coffin, and then she's just smiling and her hair is kind of blowing in the breeze, and it has that, you know, upbeat music before it gets into the Don't Panic theme song. But I really had a lot of fun with this. I think the actor, I think his name is John Bischoff, or I may be wrong, playing Michael. He's just so hilariously over the top and bad. And I love this, you know, I love the moments where he's just screaming for help, like, no one will believe me. Someone's trying to kill someone. And his eyes are all red, and everyone's just looking at him like he's insane. And he goes to the doctor, and he's like,
"Well, he is wearing his dinosaur pajamas."
Yeah, he wears those dinosaur pajamas. I mean, I can understand that if you were like playing like a 10 or 11 year old boy, but this guy's 30, and he's, even if he is really only 17, what 17 year old wears dinosaur pajamas?
Exactly.
But I love the scene with the doctors. I love the scene where the doctor's like, well, anything wrong? He's like, no, just my eyes turning red. And then the mother's like, well, I haven't told you this, but I have a drinking problem. And then it just immediately cuts to the next scene. It's just it's a very, very bad movie, but it's so entertaining. So I definitely give it a thumbs up just for entertainment value.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Joseph. How about you, Nathan?
Let's see. Unfortunately, yeah, that's the horror with going last, is I think all of us have gone last at some point or another on the show, so it kind of leaves you with not a lot left to talk about. Let's see. I love the hospital sequence, the stalking sequence with a nurse. Mm. I thought that was a lot of fun. You know, I liked that. And I'm sorry, but his love interest, Unibrow, was driving me crazy during this whole movie.
It was rippling.
I'm like, that's something that can easily be taken care of. Come on. I loved a lot of his, like, I guess, hallucinations. You know, I liked the bloody girl in class,
which is very Elm Street, wasn't it?
Mm. Oh, and I loved the bloody hand coming through the ceiling while he was sleeping. And one thing I love about, because I bought the South of the border, like, DVD set, which was, like, you know, and it's a collection of, like, horror movies from Mexico, and I've watched a few of them like this. I watched Trampa Infernal, and, you know, Cemetery of Terror. And one thing I love about movies, these movies, is the characters are just very over the top in all of them that I've seen so far. Like, they're just over the top to the point of being ridiculous. But I still love the movies anyway, because I think they're, like you guys have said, they're extremely entertaining. You know, I was not bored once during Don't Panic. I thought it was a lot of fun, you know, because I thought that there was, you know, plenty of gore, you know, bloody scenes. But, you know, of course, there's a lot of cheesy stuff to keep you entertained as well. So that's my two cents.
All right. Well, thank you, Nathan. I mean, I agree with, like, it's like a slash movie kind of amped up to 11, isn't it, with the characters, because certainly it's like I was watching, yes, Cemetery of Terror this morning, and all the characters are just complete kind of, you know, I mean, there's nothing, no substance to any of them, but they're all very, very kind of over the top. In that movie, they basically, the whole principal cast is killed, isn't it, in the first half of the movie. Well, about two-thirds, and about halfway through the movie, they're all killed, and you just have all these kids, these little, you know, not a seven-year-old kids being menaced by this killer, which is quite unusual, isn't it? You wouldn't get that in, you know, there's a scene in that one where the kids all come into the room, and there's two really young kids, about seven, and then there's kind of like younger teenagers, and there's a like an older teenage boy lying on the floor with an axe in his head, and they're all looking at it, and it's not the kind of thing you would see in an American slasher movie, but obviously the Mexicans do things you know, slightly differently. I mean, one of the things you pointed out, Eric, was the hilarious hospital sign,
yes,
that looked like someone had done it in felt tip.
Exactly, because if you watch earlier in the film, there's a notice on the school notice board saying people who arrive late will be put in detention or something, and it's done the exact same style as the hospital sign.
Right, but it's kind of bizarre, isn't it? Because they were obviously, well, I don't know if it was a hospital where they were shooting. It might not have been, because all you really see is corridors and labs and stuff like that. So maybe that wasn't actually a hospital. But again, it was one of these, it's a bit like, coincidentally, I watched Halloween 2 last night, the original, which has got an amazingly deserted hospital. And again, the hospital in Don't Panic has no patients, does it? Just a couple of nurses and security guards and a grumpy old bat on reception desk. But but also, it's kind of like, I mean, talking about Michael being overaged, it was Tony, I remember when I reviewed this, and saying he's the only 17-year-old high school student with a hairy back.
Yeah, I know. I noticed that, yeah.
Well, it's kind of so bizarre, isn't it? I mean, I suppose that's the thing, isn't it? Actually having, you know, it's an old cliche, isn't it? That having sort of 30-year-olds playing teenagers in slasher movies.
Well, and Mexicans are known for their hairiness.
Yeah.
I know that for a fact.
Well, I bet you do, Eric. I bet you've sampled a bit of chili in your time, haven't you?
Yes, I've had a nice enchilada in my mouth.
I bet you have.
Gross.
Hot and spicy.
Well, yes. Well, we can all see that in Anal Paprika 13 when it finally hits torrent.
14.
14, sorry, was it 14? Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Yes, so we'll all splash out on that when it comes out.
I should interrupt you guys and say we are experiencing some major Skype issues, so we apologize.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, everything was fine until Justin pulled his computer off the table, and I had
a slight technical mishap when I walked away from the computer, my headphones on, and took the computer with me. Okay, well, we'll talk a little bit more about the film, but see if there's any background. I haven't been able to dig up a massive amount, but I was wondering what Nathan had.
Nothing.
Okay. Thank you.
Yay.
Joseph, how about you?
The only thing I found was basically that the special effects were done by Screaming Mad George, who is, you know, semi-famous for, you know, special effects like, you know, Predator and the Reanimator, Bride of Reanimator, Nightmare on Elm Street 4, which this film is a kind of a you know, kind of a big, you know, ripoff of the Nightmare on Elm Street series. He did a couple of the Silent Night, Deadly Nights, Hide and Go Shriek. You know, he's got a pretty good, you know, slasher pedigree, but that's all I've really looked up.
Joseph, did you say Nightmare on Elm Street 4?
Yes.
Hey, Eric, do you know who's in that?
Is it the girl with the big hair gets turned into a cockroach?
Yes.
I love her. Oh my God.
So, well, thank you, Joseph. Eric, when you compose yourself.
Yeah, I find it difficult to find any information really on Don't Panic. Like Joseph was saying there, I did notice that Screaming Man George did the special effects, and he was kind of a big deal in the late 80s. He was kind of looked on as maybe, you know, going to be the new Tom Savini at one stage, but I don't know what happened to him. I was looking up on his like IMDb listing, and he seems to sort of stopped working around the mid 90s. But I mean, another film he was famous for, probably more famous for over here anyway, was Brian Yuzna's film Society, which had all these surreal, rubbery latex effects that were absolutely fantastic. And he directed a 1991 movie called Guyver, but I don't know what happened to Screaming Mad George after that. I mean, his career never blossomed. Certainly in the special effects industry, it didn't.
And he's really good, actually.
He is. He also had, he worked a bit on Nightmare on Street 3 as well, probably not to the extent as he did in Part 4. Did anyone spot, along with, they have a scene of Cemetery of Terror on the television during the film, did anyone spot Ron Cobb in there as well, talking about science fiction? He's an illustrator and designer, and he worked most famously probably on Dark Star, Alien, Raiders of the Lost Ark, The Abyss, and that. And he appears briefly in a scene on television in the film. And that's all I really have, apart from, you know, the director's other movies, which we've mentioned a few times now, Cemetery of Terror and Grave Robbers, which were released on a double bill DVD maybe 10 years ago or so. Highly recommended. If you enjoyed Don't Panic, you'll enjoy those two movies. They're really good fun. But that's all I have, I'm afraid, Justin. So over to you.
Well, I found it a little bit difficult to dig too much up on this, apart from obviously the other movies that the director did, which we'll talk about in a second. But the lead character played Michael, he also did the fantastic theme song at the end.
Cool.
He sung it, so he which we'll play out with. But and I think, I'm just looking up now.
He's a singer and an actor. He's just like that Whitney Houston.
Yeah, and the Gabriella Hassel, Alexandra, with her unibrow, she was also in, I think it was another slasher from the time, which is Vacation de Terror, or Vacation de Terror, which is the you know, Holiday Terror, I kind of guess, in 1989. The director is Ruben Galindo Jr., who was quite young when he made this. He was only born in 1962, so I think when he made Cemetery of Terror, he must have only been in his early 20s. So when he made this, you know, mid to late 20s. So, but he was a son of a famous film director who in Mexico, who outside Mexican circles probably not particularly well known, but Ruben Galindo. Lindo made lots of movies in Mexico up until recently. Now, he went on we'll talk about some of the other films he did, but towards the end, beginning of the 90s, he started branching out into making music videos. And now, apparently, he did it's the Telenova, which is the kind of the Mexican soap operas, isn't it? I think he moved into TV, and now apparently he is the CEO of an entertainment newspaper called Famous Express in Mexico, so he hasn't done anything for a while. But his first film, Cemetery of Terror, which we talked about, which you've seen that, Nathan and Eric. How about you, Joseph? Have you ever seen The Cemetery of Terror?
Oh yeah, I've seen it. I liked it. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I really like there's one of the little kids got the Michael Jackson coat on. Do you remember? With like Michael Jackson's face on the back, and of course the whole, you know, it's a rip off of Thriller as well, isn't it? As much as a kind of a slasher movie, and it's got Hugo I can never say his name,
Stiglitz.
Who was in loads of exploitation and Mexican trash in the best possible way, and also some Italian. He was in Nightmare City, famously, or infamously. But then he went on to make his other slasher movie that I am, at least the ones I'm aware of, was Grave Robbers in 1989 or 1990, which was incredibly gory, but that was teens stealing a body or robbing a grave and then being killed off, I think, by a witch. I haven't seen Grave Robbers for a while, but is that one you've seen? Anyone?
Yes, I've seen it as well.
Yeah,
okay. I remember that being very, very gory. And there's the other ones, I think you mentioned, didn't you, Nathan? There's Tramper Inferno with the crazy Vietnam vet.
I love that one. That may be one of my favorites from Mexico with his, like, Freddy Krueger nails.
Yeah.
Is that the same director?
No, that was by Pedro Galindo. So we've got a similar kind of name. Pedro Galindo III did that one. So it was kind of because I got the double bill with Cemetery of Terror and Grave Robbers that came out a little while ago. But did you say, Nathan, there's a box set called South of the Border?
It's something like that. I don't know if it's South of the Border, but it's something like that. It's got like, I don't know, 7 or 8 like Mexican horror movies on it.
All kind of 80s ones.
Yeah, they're all around 80s. The Vacation of Terror that you mentioned's on there, Vacation of Terror Part 2, okay. Don't Panic, Trampa Infernal, Cemetery of Terror. They're all on that box set.
Okay. Are they out of interest? Are they? Because what was interesting, I think, with Don't Panic, or part of the reason why the performances are perhaps a little bit stilted, to say the least, is I think they were actually, it wasn't dubbed, was it? It looked like they were all speaking English, and it was looked like it was filmed for an English-speaking market.
And a lot of the actors I thought didn't look terribly Mexican either.
But
I think they were.
No,
it's really more of a regional thing, kind of like a say South Africa. You'd find more white people there than you would, you know, traditional Africans. Whereas, you know, there's parts in Mexico where you find a lot of kind of more Caucasian-looking people who are, you know, born and bred in Mexico, who speak the language, but they don't necessarily, you know, have that distinct look about them.
Well, I noticed when the scene, because in Mexico City, because I've been to Mexico City quite a long time ago, but that when Michael and Alexandra are in the park and there's a long shot of people walking around them, everyone around them looks what you typically think of Mexican-looking, like Hispanic. Looking, and they kind of stand out, I kind of guess, as not looking like that. But I think he obviously, the idea of shooting in English was for it to be for the English market, English speaking market. Although I don't believe it got a release in America until relatively recently. But certainly, Grave Robbers and Cemetery of Terror, I think, aren't dubbed into English. They're with subtitles. Are they with subtitles on the box set? You've got, Nathan. Can you remember?
I don't remember. I think they're subtitled, but I don't know for sure.
Okay. And it's Vacation of Terror? Is that a slasher movie? Or is that like a...
I mean, I don't know if it's necessarily a slasher movie, but I feel like it's along the same lines. I think that by my standards, yes, but you guys know what my standards of a slasher movie are.
Yeah, no, fair enough.
Yes,
fair enough.
Rabbit Grannies. Yeah, I've just looked up that box set on Amazon. It's only available secondhand, and it's going for a minimum of $48. But it was called Crypt of Terror: Horror from South of the Border, Volume 1.
Okay, yeah, that's what it's called. Okay.
Okay. Cool. All right. Well, I think that's Don't Panic, isn't it? I'd like to cover Cemetery Terror or Grave Robbers at some point in the future, because I think they'd be fun to talk about in their own right. But hopefully, if you're listening to this and you haven't checked out any Mexican slasher movies from the 80s, then certainly if you look at the reviews of Don't Panic on IMDb and various places, they're uniformly bad. You know, everyone hates it. Well, not everyone, but you know, certainly if you've listened to this podcast for any length of time, you know that we can take joy in movies that perhaps other people don't like. And certainly it's not, as Joseph said, it's not a good film. But it's a very entertaining one, and if you've got a taste for 80s horror, bubblegum horror, then you could do a lot worse than Don't Panic. Right. Well, I was wondering, is it time for Eric's Joke of the Week?
I think it is.
Okay, well, if you bear with me one second while we do some behind-the-scenes things, I actually remembered to open my soundboard. So, but anyway, as I'll whittle on until we go. So anyway, here we go, Eric. Here's your intro.
It's my joke of the week. It's so freaking fantastic.
Okay, so what did the baker say to the hungry policeman when he ran out of milk, flour, eggs, and sugar? Donut panic. Because you need those ingredients to make donuts.
Okay, we'll draw a veil over that, shall we, Eric? I think Nathan and Joseph just passed out.
I was listening.
You were listening
to his, donut panic. Yeah. I didn't quite find it as funny as your last one, Eric.
Oh, Eric. Are you slipping?
It's very harsh.
Very harsh. So you're not going to be appearing at Edinburgh Fringe this year?
No, I still am.
Oh, yeah, okay. The one-man show?
Yep.
Okay. What are you going to call it? So it has to be some Inga-related thing, doesn't it? Like Victor Victoria, but Eric Inga. I don't know. Think of something. But thank you for sharing, Eric. It's always a pleasure. So who would like to go? We got some feedback, actually, haven't we? Because we haven't recorded for 3 weeks. So we do actually have some feedback this time. So thank you to everyone who's written in.
Hey, I just woke up and realized we're up to feedback. What the fuck happened?
Well, you just missed Eric's joke of the week.
Yeah, you can listen back to it, though.
Yeah, you can listen
back
to it.
That means that I passed out from the banality of it, Eric.
Oh, harsh.
Awful.
Harsh.
So harsh.
Yeah.
I've got feedback.
Okay. Well, Nathan, do you want to go first?
Yes. It says, "Hey, boys, it's Tony Hartman, a.k.a. Cody Jack from the forums. I think this is the first time I'm writing in, so this is special. I've been super busy lately, but I've finally been able to get caught up with the podcast. I'm glad you guys decided to bring back the quiz segments. It's a blast playing along. I'm also a huge fan of Nathan's talking point of the week. I have one suggestion, though. Perhaps it may be a better idea for you guys, for you guys to know the talking point beforehand, which actually I did that this time. I told you guys before what we were going to talk about. So, yes, that's right, Kodiak Jack. I will do that from now on. It would give you guys more time to think about the subject, plus it would flow a little better during the recording. Agreed. One thing that could also be cool is expanding the talking point to other cool segments. You guys could do something like a horror spotlight where you discuss films of a certain year, subgenre, actor, etc. It could give you guys a chance to brush up on some subgenres beyond slashers if you were willing for a few minutes. The talking point options are truly endless. I can't wait to listen to the Don't Panic discussion. It's been a favorite of mine for years. How could you not love the dinosaur pajama-wearing, curly mullet-rocking protagonist or his cute little love interest with the wonderful unibrow? I expect to hear the cheesetastic soundtrack littered throughout the episode. The hooky montage music will embed itself in your mind for days after watching it. I love everything about it. Sorry about the stupid long feedback, so I'll cut myself off. I'll probably write in more often now with more time available and for the fact that I miss chatting with you guys. Take care and cheers."
Well, thank you, Kodiak. That was a nice bit of feedback. So, Nathan now has the pressure of coming up with a talking point of the week every week, or every fortnight.
Oh, I've got a plethora of them ready, so I'm not worried.
Well, that's good. That's good. So there is, if people did miss the forums, there is a Body Count Continues Facebook group, isn't there?
Yes. One of the members, BTK, basically took it over and put it on Facebook after I closed the forums down. So, mm-hmm. So just search for the Body Count Continues if you used to be a forum member, and you can have all your fun on there.
Excellent. Okay. Well, who would like to go next?
I'll go.
Okay.
I've got one here. It says, "Hi, guys. I think Eric's joke of the week is the best feature on the podcast. Bye." Okay, thanks for that feedback.
Who was that from?
Steve Dempsey.
Oh.
Sounds made up.
That sounds made up.
No.
Is it from George Glass?
Is he soapy?
Oh, I actually have another piece of feedback as well. Thanks for that, Steve Dempsey, by the way. I just purchased the excellent Teenage Wasteland from Amazon. Is there going to be an extended ebook version as well, Justin? Also, when is The Night Before Easter coming to iTunes, guys? Thanks and all the best. And that's from Mike Alishan. So, Justin, is there going to be an ebook version of Teenage Wasteland, a.k.a. the slasher book?
I would love to do... I did suggest it to the people who put the book out, but they didn't bother getting back to me, so I don't know. I can try again, but the company who put it out was sold to another company, and maybe a slasher movie book is too lowbrow for them, I don't know. But it's got a different American publisher, so I'll talk to them about doing extended version or an updated version, so watch this space, but no immediate plans, unfortunately.
Okay, and what about Night Before Easter coming to iTunes?
I was not aware you could put video on there.
You can purchase video, you can rent and download for owning. What great grammar!
It's we're not really selling the movie, so I don't think it's going to be economically feasible for us to spend money to put something on there that most people are just going to ignore. Of course, after seeing the movie, I wouldn't blame them.
Hey, but I think if you're putting something for sale up on iTunes, be it music or video, I think there's tons of red tape to get through and hoops to jump through.
Yeah,
it's a lot of hassle from what I hear.
I'm just going to keep it on like Vimeo and like YouTube, where it's, you know, it's relatively simple and there's no like massive surcharge, and we still have, you know, a few DVDs left. So if people really want to see it, you know, they can just look us up on Facebook.
Excellent.
Cool. Okay.
Okay. Well, thanks for that, Mike. Yes. Over to you, Joseph.
Okay. This is from Tyler. And Tyler says, "What's up, fellas? Tyler writing in for the first time just to say I really enjoy your show. I found the podcast a couple of years ago via Johnny Krug and listened to a few shows, but then it kind of got lost or cut off of my rotation for podcasts. With that being said, the podcast I do just covered Hell Night, and after recording, I thought I might be missing something about that movie. For a couple examples, the version I watched was off of YouTube, and it was dark as hell. Dark to the point where you could hardly see anything except for Linda Blair's tits about to pop out of her shirt. Yummy.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing I noticed was kind of a lack of gore. So I started thinking, is there a better version of this movie cleaned up? Is this version trimmed of kill scenes? Is this thing going to get a Blu-ray treatment like a bunch of other horror films are these days? After thinking about it, I remembered your show and only covering slashers, so I downloaded the Hell Night episode and enjoyed the piss out of it. I've been on a Hysteria Continues kick for about a week now and have gone through over 20 of the past episodes. Can't get enough of it, and also was wondering why I hadn't been keeping up on the show over the years. Oh well, I won't fuck that up again. One last thought is, over the past couple of years, that damn cat and his toilet flushing pops in my head every now and again, and I can't help but sing it. My kids do get a kick out of it, even though they have no clue where it comes from. Really looking forward to the Silent Night, Deadly Night talk, which was, what, a couple episodes ago?
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite horror movies ever. That's enough from me. Keep up the good work, and I'll be listening later on, Tyler. And he says, P.S., Toya sucks monkey balls. Sorry, Inga.
Oh, Tyler. Just for Tyler. Just in case you've been missing that. But I can't believe he said such unkind things about Toya.
I know. He's turning into you.
Well, he equated her to monkey balls.
Monkey balls aren't nice. I've tried them.
Have you?
Yeah.
No, you haven't.
I was at the zoo, and that's why I can't go back.
You what?
You bit Toya?
No, I tried monkey ball. I tried giving a monkey a blowy at the zoo, and I can't ever go back.
I'm not surprised.
God.
Oh, my God, Eric. Well, let's move on to Hell Night, shall we? On to safer ground.
Yes. I don't remember the Blu-ray or the DVD by Anchor Bay being too dark. Was it?
No, I think it was a pretty good version. I think it's whoever's uploaded it to YouTube's probably just done a not particularly good version, or they may have even uploaded the old media tape. I don't know what that looked like, but the probably very out of print now. But the DVD by Anchor Bay is pretty good. For what I remember, I don't know why it hasn't come out on Blu-ray yet. I've got a feeling I heard something about that to do with rights issues. But as far as the gore, I think at the time director Tom DeSimone knew that the writing was on the wall as far as the gore, so he actually toned. He didn't make it a particularly gory movie. Can I hear a pussy in the background?
I think I can as well.
That would happen to be Stripes.
Okay, well, that's always good. I had to shut out Argento earlier because he kept on jumping up on stuff. But anyway, I don't think it's a particularly gory movie, although the thing that I always remember from when I first watched it is when, what was her name? I can't remember her name now. The woman who gets her head chopped off. And you get
Suki Goodwin.
No, it wasn't Suki Goodwin. It was... the other woman who was in Nightmares, the Australian woman.
Jenny Newman.
Yeah, Jenny Newman. She gets. Do you remember? Yeah. She falls down the hole, and then he chops her heads off, and her body falls away when he's holding her hair.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's a very quick cut, but it's quite effective for that. But that's that. As far as gore, there's not a massive amount extra in it, so it wasn't particularly gory. So I don't think you're probably
missing. No, but it's 10 out of 10 for bulging cleavage.
Yes, there's a lot of cleavage in that film. Yes, but I'd love to see that get a Blu-ray release. I think it'd be fantastic. But for some reason, it hasn't happened. I mean, are Anchor Bay even still going?
They're Stars Entertainment now, or something, aren't they? Or
yeah, but they're not as they don't appear to be putting stuff out like they were, because at the one time they were like the company, weren't they, back in the early days of DVDs. They were like the company putting out horror movies, weren't they?
Yeah, but Blue Underground then got rights to a lot of the stuff that was in the Anchor Bay catalog, so maybe they're the people to look to maybe for a Hell Night Blu-ray release.
Maybe. But it'd be great to get Linda Blair and Tom DeSimone and people back for... I think the commentary actually on the old Anchor Bay release, I think actually has them doing a commentary, and I remember that being quite fun.
Yeah.
So
that commentary is hilarious.
Yeah, yeah. So,
because like at one point when she screams, I thought that was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, okay. Well, thank you, Tyler. I've got one here, and I think this one may be a bit controversial. So,
uh-oh.
This is.
Do they say something about Toya again?
Nothing about Toya, no.
Okay, that's okay then, go ahead.
But this is from our friend Terry Mittig in Belgium. So he may be mentioning Rabbit Grannies, because Rabbit Grannies was obviously from Belgium. But anyway, he says, it's been a while, but I'm still here, like Jason in Friday 13th, the first chapter. The first chapter? Yes. I don't quite understand that. But anyway, first, I would like to congratulate Nathan for his wedding, even if it happened something like 3 months ago. I was a little bit surprised Nathan invited only one friend. But I think you've talked about that, haven't you, Nathan?
Yeah, we had to go, we had to fly out of state to do it because we can't legally get married where we are. So unfortunately, our friends couldn't be there.
Well, hopefully for not longer, not too much longer, if things go the way they look like they might.
About SCOTUS is appealing it right now. They're working on that right now.
Mm-hmm. He says, I have to say sorry to Nathan and Joseph because I wrote 6 months ago or later, can't recall, that Nathan's favourite movie was Black Christmas and Joseph's TCM. In fact, it was the opposite. I was also surprised you chose Rabbit Grannies. How on earth can this film be considered as a slasher movie? I totally agree with Eric. It is not a slasher movie at all. I have this film on DVD and it's quite entertaining, but not as good as the classic Night of Demons from 1988 by Kevin Tenney. I'm not into porn movies, but I'm sure Eric delivered a great performance in Nana Paprika. How was your meeting of Eric, Justin?
What did he say there, sorry?
He says, how was your meeting with Eric, Justin? Well, I was saying, unfortunately, we didn't see his starring role, although we did hear a bit about it and some of the background information.
And you found out that he's ticklish.
Yes, yeah, you found out he's ticklish.
Yes.
Did we ever play that clip?
Oh, yeah. You got to play it.
I don't think I've got
the audio.
It. Have I got? Yeah, I haven't got it. I haven't got it lined up. But remind me, we will play the audio of Eric's tickle porn.
No.
It says. He says, "I know you like tongue-in-cheek slasher movies.
I know you like tongue-in-cheek, Justin. Sorry.
Cheesy movies also, but what about reviewing really serious and good, technically well-made and well-written movies? I'm not sure if that's up our street, is it? I don't think, Nathan, you won't be picking any time soon.
I want to do Driving Miss Daisy in the next year.
Okay.
No, I'm very sorry. But now, in our past, we've picked, like, serious, you know, horror movies. I mean, stuff that's considered classics. We've covered, you know, Texas Chainsaw and Black Christmas and Halloween. You know, we've covered, you know, some serious slashers, too.
Mm.
But I won't be. No. I will be picking. Actually, my next choice is going to be amazing. And that's all I'll say.
Well, we'll see. We'll see about that. This is a controversial bit. It says, I know. No, one thing I'm a little bit disappointed in is a lack of interest of Nathan and Joseph for the horror genre.
What?
When you were up. I shall continue. When you were asked, Nathan and Joseph, what you saw recently, most of the time, you did not watch anything horror related. And that's a pity. So you should defend yourselves.
Well, no, this time defense, I did. In our defense, it's not like they're releasing a whole lot of horror films these days.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that's the problem, you know. I mean, I do watch a lot of horror, but the reason I don't bring it up is it's stuff we've already covered or, yeah. You know, it's stuff they've already talked about, you know, because I do watch horror fairly often, I'd say.
Yeah, me too. I tend to kind of just cover, you know, newer stuff that's out or stuff that, you know, I had never seen before. And, you know, it's kind of few and far in between over the last year. So I'm hoping 2015 will be a better year for, you know, genre releases and stuff.
Okay, right. Well, thanks for the fulsome answer. So hopefully that will satisfy Terry. He goes on to say, would it be possible for you to review great slasher / survival movies like these ones? And he gives examples of Southern Comfort by Walter Hill, The Hitcher, the 1986 version from Harmon. He says, God, I love this movie. It belongs to my favourite movies. The cinematography is amazing. The atmospheric score from Isham and solid acting. And he closes by saying, a podcast listener asked you if you would review this great movie, but you did not seem to enjoy this movie. I presume he's talking about The Hitcher. There's no real reason why we wouldn't do The Hitcher, is there, at some point?
I don't remember us saying we didn't enjoy The Hitcher, because I do like The Hitcher a lot, actually.
Mm. He also goes on to say another couple of suggestions were Alice, Sweet Alice, and Visiting Hours, which has a great cast. These kind of movies are not only cheesy and fun movies. Looking forward to hearing from you. And that's Terry Mittig from Belgium, a slasher Jalo fan, he calls himself. So, thank you, Terry. Always good to hear from you. And hopefully we explained ourselves.
Well, all I have to say about the Rabbit Grannies thing is anytime somebody brings up to me why would a slasher podcast cover Rabbit Grannies, I'm going to say we covered Predator. And that's going to be my response every single time.
Well, I'd say Predator's more in line with a slasher film than Rabbit Grannies.
How so?
It's got
guns, and it's an alien. It's an alien, and they're killing he's killing them in alien ways with guns. At least the Grannies use swords.
Yes, but you know, Predator is more in line with 10 Little Indians. Rabbit Grannies is more in line with Night of the Demons. I think Eric would back me up here.
Stop fighting or I'll go and wet the bed.
Predator is not a slasher. Rabbit Grannies is not a slasher, but they both contain slasher elements enough that we covered them on the podcast.
I never said it was a slasher.
Okay, we'll see what you started,
I couldn't find any slasher element to Rabbit Grannies, I'm afraid. Sorry.
It's like a people in a big mansion getting picked off one by one. Justin backed me up on that.
Well, yes, that is true.
In the episode.
Mm. Well, you see what you started, Terry. So let's move on.
In fighting.
Before it comes to fists. have we got any? I've got another one, a little one here. Is there anyone else got anything?
I'm sure you do. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
No.
Nope.
I don't have any.
No, okay. Well, there's Dear Hysteria Continues, Joseph, don't give up on that Australian accent. It's working well. With a little bit of work, you could pass for an Australian, potentially, in brackets. If you guys ever need an Australian on the cast, I'd be more than happy to join for an episode. Then you would have nearly all accents of the English-speaking Western worlds, in particular if you cover the Australian slash and nightmares. Anyway, keep up the good work as usual. Kind regards, John Matthews. So...
Are the Australian slasher, in inverted commas, the day after Halloween?
Well, yes, that's that would be a controversial pick as well, wouldn't it? Because it's...
It'd be like something that Justin or Nathan would pick.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ!
Then I think I might. Actually, I think I do want to pick that one.
Oh, Nathan. Because our poor listeners, it's Eric's pick next, so he's going to tell us what...
Back on Australian slashers, we have not covered Next of Kin yet, have we? That's, I would call that a slasher, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah.
Is that not New Zealand?
Or is that New Zealand? I don't know. They both have similar accents to me.
Does it even have to be a slasher for us to cover it anymore?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, at least, I mean, I think I did... I listened to, I think, Outside Cinema. They covered Next of Kin recently, and they enjoyed it, but they said it wasn't a slasher movie. But I kind of disagree. I think it is. It has enough elements in it for it to be considered a slasher movie. But yeah, we could certainly cover it. I mean, it's one of my favourites. It's probably my you know, the best Australian slasher movie. I'm pretty sure it's Australian. Let me just look it up. Talk amongst yourselves.
Well, if we do play that,
Australia and New Zealand on IMDb.
Oh, it says both.
Yeah. If we cover that, we'll have to play Knifey Spoonie.
Gosh,
have you ever played Knifey Spoonie, Eric?
You are getting good.
Fair Dinkum, I don't think so.
Fair Dinkum.
Fair Dinkum.
Oh, I see you played Knifey Spoonie before.
Simpsons reference.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Filming locations of Next of Kin is all in Australia. Oh, and New Zealand. So, there you go. So.
Either way, it's still an excellent film.
Yes. I'm sure we'll get around to it. But, Eric, do you want to tell us what you're going to regale us with next time?
Yes, we're going into the woods for a film that we hopefully will all love. It's one that's long overdue for the History Continues treatment. It is Just Before Dawn.
And it's our fourth 4-year anniversary.
Oh, yes, it is.
Gosh. Sort
of, yeah, end of January, yeah.
Wow, you get less of a murder. So, 4 years, so we'll be celebrating next time, and then we've got a lot coming up, and Nathan has got something very, very special to share with us at some point, haven't you, Nathan?
Yay.
Yes, and the beating that I've taken over Rabbit Grannies, it's going to be all worth it. When my next pick comes around.
Oh, yeah. Hold on to your hats. So, well, thank you for joining us again. We're going to be playing out with the theme tune for Don't Panic, which is sung by the star of the movie, and it couldn't be more 80s. So is there anything else we want to say before we sign off? I take that.
I love everybody.
Okay. Well, say goodbye to the good people.
Goodbye, bye, good people.
See you
down under.
See you next time.
Bye-bye.
Well, if it's in the Bible, it's true.
Okay.
Are you sure it wasn't the cable?
What happened? Pardon?
I pulled it off.
But it's because when you pull out the microphone, because it's USB, if you plug it back in, it just says, what?
Be getting a root canal that day.
I have a feeling you guys are going to love it. And here's the thing, though. If for some reason one of you comes up and says, oh, well, I can't make it. You guys can record without me. No, I'll put it off until we're all there. I would say I don't know which one I like more. I think they're both on par with each other.
Jesus.
Oh, God.
Because Blood Lake, I think, is a little slower paced than Terra Ten Killer is.
Oh, God, is that possible?
Don't let me go.